the street.
Just throw him at the head of the table. It'll be fine.
All right. I'm,
I don't know,
I'm
John
still,
or Steve, huh?
I will still record the meeting, and we'll still go through the agenda like normal otherwise. Thank you.
It's too nice of a week to get people here, I guess.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for attending the spring Kenosha County Land Council meeting. Call to order here at 9:04 a.m. We have Sean Smith and Andy Bueller excused for sickness. Steve Bostrom has been excused, and Supervisor O'Day is not here. We have not heard from him. Citizens' comments.
I think we know everyone who's here, so.
I don't.
I don't think he's.
Oh, no, oh, we'll do introductions then.
Introductions, yeah.
There you go.
We can do introductions.
Introductions?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mike, do you want to start?
Mike Bashley, the Application Services Manager with Kenosha County IT.
Joellen Storrs, Kenosha County Register of Deeds.
Porter Staples, Sheriff's Department.
Lieutenant Brian Easter with the Kenosha Sheriff's Department.
Terry Jacobson, Kenosha County Treasurer.
Rob Mary, Sewer Pack, and Kenosha County Surveyor.
And Scott Chutzi, Kenosha County Land Information Office.
You may not even have known we had a county surveyor.
It may have
not. I think that's one of those weird points in law that normal people don't know.
Yes, I agree.
But people think that we have a county surveyor for them.
Oh, for them personally?
Yes.
To survey all of their
that.
Property for them.
I don't know how many calls I receive and saying, I need my property surveyed. It's like, you're
yeah, that's not what
person.
A county surveyor does.
Well, you're the county surveyor. You take care
exactly.
of that.
Exactly. You're not going to take care of that? Come on.
Yeah. You mean that's going to cost me $500 to $1,000?
You're like, yep.
Right. Don't like it when you say that.
Yes.
You can Google surveyors in Kenosha
exactly.
County.
Exactly. Correct.
Pick one. Ask your friends.
Happy to help.
Do they list that on Andy's list?
Yes.
Item number four on the agenda, we're going to talk about the Kenosha County Monumentation Program. The Monumentation Program is the foundational element to our mapping program. If you go back and look at our mapping program, we have deployed millions of dollars since the mid-1980s to map the county, just like every other county in the Southeast region has. The Monumentation Program is really the genesis of that, and without it, we wouldn't have the type of program we have. That particular program is administered by Rob Mary, our county surveyor, and he's going to give us a little on that program and
sure.
let us know about its importance and what he does on an annual basis.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, as far as I do have a few touches. But I will sit there and say, I mean, the monumentation program is paramount. I look at it almost like a foundation of a house. If it's not, if the foundation is poor, well, guess what? It doesn't matter what you build on top of it. It's going to have, you know, problems and things that are going to, unfortunately, kind of start to fail. It's the aspects of all these base layers that we've established over time, but from the parcel surveys to, you know, the orthos, you know, to the obliques and things of that sort, were all really, you know, established through, you know, through this system. It's the public land survey system, but we also use it geodetically to support all these other, you know, base layers that now have come into play and have been completed. So a couple things, you know, to start off with, we did unveil kind of a new, as far as document search application. So what instead of looking at it from a specific where these public land survey section corners and, you know, centers of sections and things of that sort, we're looking at it now as a database and trying to bring into light the aspects of these attributes or attributing it instead of just making a flat file and just saying, here you go. This has been, we've maintained it. So with that, I mean, we're, you know, the southeast, the, you know, as far as sewer pack is not only supporting Kenosha County, but also supporting the other six counties within the region. So we're looking at it as a, you know, a little larger of an area. And we're managing over 12,808, you know, varying corners, you know, throughout this region.
All right, this is where Terry asked the stupid question.
Yep.
I know what a quarter section corner is.
Okay.
And a center is. What's it all along with meander?
Meander corners?
And witness. I don't know those
absolutely.
Ones.
Absolutely. very good. Question. A meander corner would be as you extend a section line or quarter line to a water body.
Okay.
So
like
that
a river
was where it
a
would terminate at
okay.
that location. And, you know, theoretically that line would be extended into the lake.
Okay.
We do compute lake corners, and that helps us with our, you know, closing out quarter sections and closing out.
Okay.
So for acreages and land use, we have a physical closeout at that point in time. So we do compute, and that's why I say lake corners. It's kind of, it's arbitrary. It's not actually a physical corner. It's
because
a computed
they change.
Corner. And they do. And it's one of those where, but those are also established, and we do have the as a record, you know, as far as in our position. There are actually 12,497 actual, like, monumented, you know, corners.
The things
in the ground
yeah.
you know. And they're substantial in the ground. I mean,
yeah.
these are... they're concrete monuments that are trapezoidal shaped, so it's narrower at the top, it's rectangular at the top and rectangular at the bottom, but the bottom is larger. It's 12 inch by 12 inch. It's 9 inch by 9 inch at the top, so it really provides a greater, you know, when you establish or place these in the ground, they're stable. So in these locations, keeping in mind, you know, if you're not aware of this system that was put in place, the system was put in place in the 1800s. And our goal is and this was the first, when they established these locations, the surveyors that went out in the 1800s, that was the first time land had ever been, you know, how do we subdivide land? How do we establish land? How do we even know what land is out there? So this was the first commercial kind of application of, here's land, and oh, by the way, it's a savanna of trees. Oh, this is a savanna of prairie. This is a, you know, area that's swamp. You know, they wanted to know what people, as land was coming back, where, you know, from the East Coast, what type of land are we dealing with? So we could sell it to either a farmer and or some other, you know, a logger or some other application. So again, we didn't have the internet, so we didn't have any way or, you know, satellite imagery to be able to understand this. This is a way of communicating back to the, you know, to the east, you know, that what type of, you know, frontier were we embarking in and giving that as an application. And a patent, you know, that would be able to transfer land from the government to now an individual. So this is, and the goal is with the county surveyor's responsibility is to be able to sit there and perpetuate that location so that when ownership transfers from one to the next, that transfer is that patent of that land or that parcel, there isn't any kind of gap or clout in that, you know, in that transferring of that.
I was gonna have a point to start measuring from. So.
Yes, exactly. You gotta have a location, and you have to have a location physically in the ground. So that's the more important aspect. Is we all reference, you know, it's all computed geodetically. We have a coordinate, but in reality, no one works on that. Everybody says that fence is my location. That, you know, that corner is where I know where my corner is. And you hear that all the time. People want to see the physical evidence and not the, you know, theoretical magic of GPS and all the other good stuff that we do have. So the concept was, and now moving into moving to technology today, instead of using it as a flat file and, you know, and having a record of a record of a record of a, you know, of that individual flat file, we're now taking it into a database, and we can now manage that and become more smarter with our decisions, you know, as to how we perpetuate and maintain that. So with this new search application, you know, there was a couple things. So next slide. So obviously we're looking at the region. We have a link. I provided the link in the ad, you know, in the PowerPoint, but the link, you know, with the seven counties, you know, for supporting the region. As we zoom in, you know, to the Kenosha County, now instead of just looking at it on a countywide basis, you start to see all the meander corners and the you know, section corners associated. Keeping in mind, the area is on a half mile by half mile grid. So as we subdivide land, this is what we get, you know, in this half mile, you know, system.
Scott, throughout. Looking at this reminds me of the conversation you had with the DOR when they wanted us to change our quarter section. In the legal description.
Oh, well, that's a little, that's problematic.
Well, we don't get to just change those.
That becomes, so as we zoom in again, you know, so what we can, you know, as you start zooming in on a sectionalized basis, you start to see that we now have, a unique identifier. So what we've done is, you know, we're having to manage all these 12,800, you know, corners. We had to establish a unique identifier. So that was helpful in us being able to now, you know, have an individual location. So with that, once you click on an individual point, and actually you can also have an image background or an image reference too. You know, that I think everybody works better on an image, but you know, but if you want the classical map, I mean, that's our basis, but you can use as a backdrop with imagery too, for that matter, or select imagery as a backdrop, which is good. So as we zoom in on, say, a specific location, we end up having a pop-up, you know, as we click on, say, the individual point. This helps land surveyors, because that is the kind of the basis of every survey is coming, originating from that, say, given corner and that section corner. And that helps us, it transfers that parcel to that, you know, from one landowner to the other, and using that as these monuments in the ground as a kind of a point of reference or a basis of each of those surveys that you'll see legal descriptions or deeds, you know, referencing to. Okay, so you go to and click on it, we end up getting now a report. This report, we call it a dossier, but it basically is a, you know, it's the tie sheet, it's a sketch and an affidavit that really is the most important, you know, in help part of this. But we do up top now, because we went through a few years ago a migration. We started everything what was referenced in the North American datum of 1927. Great, you know, was you know, kind of instrumental in establishing now where that physical location, we now establish a geodetic, you know, a coordinate to it, and putting a coordinate on in you know, on the ground. But as we got, you know, with the use of GPS and everybody using GPS, it's not only just a surveyor using GPS, but the whole world is now using GPS. We got it in our phones, we got it in our cars, we got it, you know, everywhere we can possibly use. So at that point, we had to, instead of using the old, and that operates on NAD, technically it operates on WGS 84, but NAD 83 is very much the system that it mimics and is in the surveying world, in the engineering world, that all suffices. So we had to change, you know, from going from NAD 27, which, as Scott mentioned, is where the millions of dollars were invested in, you know, in looking at it and establishing this stuff in the back in the 80s, and spending an inordinate amount of money and time establishing these 27 coordinates. Now with GPS, we can go beep and get a position. you know, but so reinvesting all that money was really a hard justification, knowing that we had just spent all that time and effort, you know, for the 27. As time went on and techniques became more, more affordable. Well, more affordable, and we could justify the return on investment that we needed to move and migrate to 83. So now we have dual coordinates. So now that information is we have to manage two instead of one. As we move forward. So we established, you know, the two coordinates, technique wise, you know, we're using, what we did was we used a kind of a, what's called a least squares approach. So at that point, that least squares approach has, you know, two, is not necessarily, we directly observe that coordinate or that, that monument, at this point in time. So it's a computed coordinate. Well, you know, keeping in mind, we have a computed 83 coordinate, and I'll talk more about that in our maintenance. But right now, we're managing both the 27 and 83 values at this point. What we're also now at this, because we're having to manage 27 and 83, we have to compute these control summary diagrams instead of being on 80. You know, that normally we always have just one. Well, we got two, so we're having to compute, you know, 27. So instead of looking at it on a 6 square mile area, we're doing it now at a 1 mile square area. So it's having a little, it makes it a little easier to manage. But the good news is, instead of us hand computing everything, which, you know, was all fine, and got your trigonometry establishing all
made
this.
Made your seventh grade math teacher lie that you actually would use this someday.
Yes, which I love trigonometry. Trigonometry is your friend for everybody. But if you don't, you can now. What we're doing is we're computing it programmatically. So at that point, we're using the database as a means to find and do the trig for us, automatically.
I'll have to hunt down Ms. Motter and tell her that. Sorry.
Yes. So with our change, we were on almost an embarrassment to say, but we were ARC IMS platform, and that was pretty archaic. As we've now migrated to an enterprise database, and on a SQL database too, for that matter. It's a much more efficient way of managing our data set. So, and you can see from the left is our old, to the right, and keeping in mind there's imagery too, for that matter, as a backdrop. And it shows roads and shows features and it shows, road names and things of that sort. So instead of being more stick figures, it has a little bit more more detail. So, all right. And again, the dossier, as far as flat file and, they look the same, as far as the left and the right, the benefit you have is a report on the right has 50, it's attributed with, or has 56 attributes associated with that. It makes that same look and feel, but it's all being pulled from a report instead of a fill in the blank kind of flat file that we establish. So
you have that on every monument?
Every monument.
Wow.
Yep. So we went to that was part of the whole, when we migrated, we were thinking ahead and saying, okay, let's not just go back to the same old and have to now write in the NAD83 position. Let's start clipping and pulling the affidavits and the aspects and put it into a database and manage the database. So let's work smarter and not, harder, with having to try to republish those dossier sheets, those flat, sheets at that point. So a couple new things that what we're, at that point implementing Because we have to deal with 83, and we use the 83 as a compute, this least squares of, you know, computation. So instead of when we were asked, and there's always construction, I just passed all kinds of construction going on. And sorry, but that is part of the reality of, you know, roads and what we have to use them for. But in the majority of these section corners are in roads. And so instead of us just going and fixing the monument, pulling the monument out because they've been broken because of roads, what we're doing is we're now GPSing the location, that the each corner as we do our maintenance or, you know, establishing our the pre-construction aspects. So what we'll do is we'll make ties that will be outside of the construction zone area, because it'll, everything that we're identifying as features to relocate it are also ripped out and being torn out. So we're using the coordinate as a validator, but, you know, is to assist in that. But we're also verifying, you know, the 83 position. So instead of us just saying, okay, what was, is, you know, because the 27 values were done by traversing and other techniques that are not as precise as GPS. GPS is very accurate and it's in it and very precise in its measuring and its measuring capabilities. So what we do is now have a secondary database of all the GPS and the GPS observations in that, you know, as a collection, you know, and as a hub to validate the positions of what we publish. So we can always have a check on ourselves. One, if we've got more GPS measurements, to say, do the GPS measurements compare from the previous GPS? So we're always, or is the monument moving? Or the monument, is there a question of concern that the monument has been damaged? You know, so we have another ability to check on our positions. So we use that as a database, but more importantly, we use the next slide, is we have an Esri screen that really kind of helps us display our, you know, graphically, so we can get a better sense. The bigger dots mean there's a difference between what we had established computed-wise and versus what we had GPS-wise. So if there's a 2/10 or greater, the bigger dot kind of sits glaring you, you know, kind of square in the face, because whereas the other ones are less than 2/10, where we feel that is accurate enough, you know, as far as.
So when you get a big dot, you fix it?
Yes, we have to go back. So there's two things we have to look at. One, is the monument moved again? You know, is there a concern that physically its location is different than what was in the field? Or two, the technique that was used in the 80s isn't quite as accurate as what it really is and should be. And so we're having to adjust the 83 position to reflect the GPS position that we just observed.
Do you ever find any changes that would affect somebody's property, you know, where they thought their property line was here, but it's actually over here?
Well, I know in Waukesha County that there was a
big to do.
Yeah, there was it was almost like 40 feet.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
It was significant.
Yeah.
And so what happened was the county surveyor back in the 80s established it on like almost like there was going to be some sort of right of way, and it was off, and it remained off, and it was one of those where in that monument in subsequent surveys had established, and it's like, that's not the correct location. I can go back to the 1800s and I can see it was just mistakenly placed. It was like when they established it, they established it on a PK nail or a railroad spike or something that was in the ground, and 40 feet to the north was also a PK nail or railroad spike.
And they picked the wrong one?
And they picked the wrong one. And it was one of those where, and it was erroneous. I mean, it was not even, you know, remotely close. But then subsequent surveys.
Where, you know, 6 inches, you could be like shifting a curve.
It's not like my fence is actually on my neighbor's property. It's a little bit.
That's a little different. I mean, but it was, that was something significant. And all the subsequent surveys, you know, are now a mixed match between what was done from the
original. So how would something like that be rectified?
It's not. Because that's the issue, is you have to kind of demonstrate the two. You know, like if you, the old survey was on the wrong one and the new survey is on the new one, you're going to have.
Because you have a whole bunch of documents that are based on the old mistaken one.
Land records management, how does that, with a deed is wrong, a legal description, and who owns that property?
Surveyor says, that's Scott's problem.
That is not my problem. My problem is to identify the issue on the ground. I'm not.
And then, have a nice day, Scott. And then, yes, and then we get these gaps, and we revert to original owners and all that crazy stuff, right?
I mean, it would seem to me that you could get litigation would be involved, could be
sometimes
involved
here.
Yes. And that's why we have to often run these situations past Joe Cardamone and John Moyer. Because there are legal ramifications.
Well, I know there's gaps, and I know you get leaned on from title companies to, well, you can just close that gap.
You know how
you
that
can
gap,
just do that,
you,
Scott.
You know how more often than not that gap gets closed? Is I send it a tax bill, nobody pays those taxes, we take it, and then we try to give it to the adjoining taxpayer to combine with their parcel to get rid of the gap.
It's like, unless it's a developer that really wants to do something with it.
Since 2016,
it's a more of a problem.
We have not assigned ownership to a gap other than when we review the deeds again and we find out that it was misinterpreted the first time.
Right.
Yeah.
That happens, but we do not assign ownership to gaps. I tell everyone flat out, my job is not to be a judge and assign land to you. A judge in the court system
can do
that.
Well, that's good, but you know, sometimes you can run into neighbors fighting over property, and
happens all the time. And they both think they have the right to that same
thing. Adamantly.
That is always, those are the worst scenarios or worst case, I mean, to deal with, and obviously it's more. It's
and
like,
they happen more often than we'd like,
illegal.
I feel like we had a ton of them back in like the late 80s, early 90s. We had a bunch of gaps that got cleaned up back then, and that was probably when we were doing this whole process, right? Like,
I'm sure I'm sure from the automated parcel would help identify all the gaps or close out some of the questionable things that might have been just interpretation, you know, coming from one corner or another. But it's
so one survey from one year to the next could be different. If a monument moves for whatever reason.
That is correct. So you have the important aspect is what's physically in the ground. So sometimes a coordinate when you're computing is not necessarily the hope and goal is obviously to take 0.2 feet and reconcile that or get that corrected.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually what you're going to see is a geodetic improvement. So the measurements on the ground physically in that, say, quarter section are going to match up better,
mm-hmm.
you know, in at this point in time. But I think your tolerance is 2 feet?
2.5.
Yeah, okay.
Well, and to give you an idea, we have, I think, roughly 300 gaps mapped on our system. So if they're of significance, we will map it.
Yeah.
They're out there.
Because you have to imagine that over the years, those physical monuments shift as ground kind of shifts a little bit.
It shifts, but it should. They're substantial, so they really shouldn't. I mean, they started out as fence or just posts, wood posts.
So we're better than we were.
Yes. So you have to understand this. I always view the circle of error in the surveyor's intent back in the 1800s is they're on a horse and an axeman.
They got a little wheel measurey thing. And
they have chains, and the chain is considered.
They're on the chain.
They're in links. They're 66 feet in length, and somebody's pulling it and holding it.
Those descriptions. 10 chains, 5 links, northeast.
Correct. And that's exactly it. And that's basically the extent. It's always, I love reading some of the old notes and just the, you know, expressions and what they had to endure.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't know what land, what they were going to walk into. So it's basically, you know, today you could be on a nice open prairie and it's easy just laying out the lines. The next day you could be in a swamp and it's going to be awful.
I did laugh when I found out that the reason we call it the assessment roll and the tax roll subsequently is because it was literally a rolled up piece of paper that they had on their horse when they're going around and doing the assessment.
Exactly.
I'm like, that's why it's called an assessment roll.
Right. So it's basically, so that was all, you know, yeah, so that's always, so the error itself is, you know, what the intent was to lay out on a half mile. Well, sometimes you'd have a half mile and someone forget the, you know, the full chain and you'd not be quite a half mile. Or you, as you go further north, you go into very much a iron country and these were magnetic compasses. Well, you start realizing the mm-hmm. what's in the ground is just misleading you. So you'd see these half mile sections and they are trapezoidal in shape. I mean, they do not look like normal, like half mile sections at all. So, so it's always funny. So you just have to keep that in mind as far as in how that sometimes those monuments are in the ground, but you know, they're stable now, but weren't necessarily as stable as they were because they were degrading. A fence or a post, a wood post.
It's gonna rot at some point.
It's gonna rot, exactly, correct. So at that point. So maintenance-wise, also with, so what we're doing is we're now, instead of just kind of on a whim, you know, like I think we need to go out to this area, we're keeping track of, like, when we go out and start looking and evaluating section, you know, corners as we're for pre-construction. We don't just search for the one corner that is in the construction site area. We're searching around the area just so we know that, you know, the corners in that area are, you know, properly perpetuated and are in good shape. And we keep a log, you know. So what we're doing is, you know, we have now, like, you know, in this example, the one that's highlighted, it says, you know, missing, you know, as far as, so there is no, we don't, there, the monument is gone. But it could be, when I say missing, it could be paved over or actually completely, the physical monument has been removed.
Could be bulldozed.
Could be bulldozed.
Could be kids pull it out of the ground.
Could be a farmer pulling something out.
How hard is it? I mean, how heavy are they? How hard would it be to
substantial?
For somebody
they're
to,
substantial.
Yeah, I'd say. Yeah.
They're roughly about 180 to 220 pounds.
I mean,
it's
so
not
a kid's
one of those.
Probably not going to pull it out of the ground.
Usually, the farmer is the one.
I was going to say. A rural kid might, because they got access to a tractor and chains, so you can get into some trouble with that combination.
I have had where also landowners don't like the
location
and have pulled it out too. So, and basically made, well, you can't find it. In hopes that somebody will come back in and will reestablish it in a different location.
In a place,
you know,
they
that
like
would
better?
Be, yes, correct.
That works better for their landscape.
Yes.
Yeah.
This was going up north, and this was where one had a deer stand and didn't like that it now fell. It was a perfect deer stand, and it was actually falling now on
the neighbor's property.
The neighbor's property.
Oh.
And the neighbor, and so he.
Welcome to Wisconsin.
He pulled the thing out. So,
that's what I'm talking about.
Yes, exactly. It is what it is, but those are the type of things where, and I know farmers. Traditionally, especially these, you know, that are in their farm field, we try to bury them at least a foot below the grade, you know, for the, you know, to help
but
with their farming.
But as erosion happens.
But as erosion happens and things just change, and next thing you know, ding, you know, it hits one of their, and that's the
and
last.
And
that's,
somebody's ticked off because
somebody's
they're...
getting their tractor out and yanking that thing out because they don't want to hit that anymore. So, So we'll have that log, and we'll keep that log, and we'll use that as a mechanism to keep us on track to.
So there's no tracking chip in the monument itself.
No, there is no tracking. There are newer tracking chips. You know, there's RF for utilities and things of that sort. So, but no, it's just the good old fashioned concrete with rebar and.
How long have those big monuments been used? I mean, usually they were just like metal round stakes that were used at
yes.
one point, correct?
The metal round stakes are property, you know, property. For
smaller
properties. These are, if you look in the middle of the road, you know, like in a half mile, and you start kind of, you know, mapping it out, you'll see the brass disc, but you don't realize that it's a solid piece of concrete that's going down at a post. So they're fairly substantial. You started out with like wood post, then back in the early 1900s, you might get like an axle or some other spoke or some substantial piece of metal. And then towards the 1930s, they started using like limestone, like monuments, and they would the limestone monument would be then like a disc, or it actually wouldn't be a disc, you'd see a chisel cross, like, you know, kind of running across the top of the mine, that was, you know, to be more substantial and have durability and stability, so it wouldn't just rot or be broken or because it was some sort of rusting out, you know, because of its iron content. Mm-hmm. And again, we have a graphical map that helps us, you know, instead of looking at it just in a simple
You're
database.
Not showing all those parcels I have that are in Lake Michigan, though.
No, I'm not, so sorry. We just keep it straight. And we have a listing of the types of monument, you know, conditions that we have associated with it. So we have kind of a quick glance that, one, we can look at and say we haven't been to it in a long time, and we can go now start maybe, you know.
Put that in the rotation?
Yes, that's exactly it. And the idea is, when we looked at the 56 attributes, we talked about like the attribute of the affidavit. When was that written? So we can look at it and say, well, it was written in 1982. I think we probably need to go back to it and see if that monument actually exists or not. So the goal is to start looking at, again, trying to be smarter about what our decisions are. We have to deal with the economic development. We got to deal with the building of this information. It's now, how do we want to handle the, where we go, what we do, with our observations, so, or with our time, so.
Hopefully there's an insight.
So I have a question.
Yep.
How much of this is available to local surveyors to look at and view as a resource for them as they go out and do property surveys?
Well, the database is available to everybody. So that is something that they can have access. It's, if you look at it underneath, they can have access to any of the information. It's all public at that point in time. The maintenance log and that and our GPS log is internal, but we will be adjusting data as we see fit. Unfortunately, the whole southeast of sections 122 and 123 there's going to be a lot of coordinate readjustments. But the idea is that so the coordinate will get immediately updated. But those logs would not be available at that point. So, on a separate note, that we're going to use like ARC, our Esri experience for our new for our report coming up for activities, in hopes to be more forthcoming with showing where things might change, where we updated, you know, reset corners, and had, you know, and have a link that you could use and access to show, you know, the general public that these activities.
Okay.
Instead of, again, just using it as a flat file.
All right, so first meeting, you learned more about surveying than you ever wanted to know, right?
Just soaking it all in.
It's good to know, though.
Any more questions before we move on? Thank you, Rob.
Hey, you're welcome.
Let's jump back into
WLIP?
Yeah, our compliance status in the WLIP program. Really, the reason that we're here to ensure that the funding is used properly for land information-based projects. Back in February, we completed the 2022 grant agreement. We will talk a little bit more about that project in a bit more detail here in just a few moments. But that agreement has been signed. The version 8 parcel submittal was submitted to the state in March. That data will be plugged into the statewide database and will be available to the public, I believe, in July, right around July sometime. But there is still version 7 data from last year there, so if you want information on parcels and or property ownership anywhere throughout the state of Wisconsin, you can get it on that particular application. Our expenditure activity report, I will work with finance on that as I do every year. That is due at the end of June. We will get that out. And then the last thing we have for the year will be our 2023 grant application, which will be due at the end of December. And this committee will meet to discuss the use of those funds probably very likely in November sometime. So our 2020 grant was a $40,000 grant, and it was chosen to be used for the creation of public works related mapping applications. We are currently working with Axum Geospatial on developing those applications. There was a number that we did, bike trails, park amenities, pavement management, sign inventory, and so forth. We got through the priority applications, and those are live up on the Kenosha County Parks website right now. And we are now working on the additional applications. We're about 25% of the way through them. Those have to be done by June 30th of this year. So
so that's the new bike thing that we were doing and stuff like that, right?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So that project is moving along. Any questions on the 2020 project? No. 2021. It was a $50,000 award, and we are using it for the rewrite of the interactive mapping application, which was last rewritten in 2013, and probably our flagship resource here at the county for mapping. You know, anyone in the public can log on to our website and use that to get information about their property. Mike's team is going to be writing that very soon. Sharing details, Mike?
We've already gone through and started looking at the new Esri tools that we're going to be using for rewriting the interactive mapping app. We're trying to reproduce the functionality that we had before so we don't lose any of that, and then also see what new functionality we can put in there. I'm going to try to have some more code in there to really be able to understand performance and who's using what tools and stuff like that as well.
And just kind of tweak and make it a little smoother working.
The biggest change we'll be making is making it mobile friendly. So
yeah, that's a problem right now.
Yeah. So that will probably be the main focus on the stuff that we're looking at for it. But Jonathan has been, you know, he's been figuring out ways to take out of the box tools that Esri provides and tweaking them so that they work better, look better. Because some of that out-of-the-box stuff is kind of
funky,
plain-looking. Yeah. so, So yeah, I mean, we're starting to do that. We got a couple of projects that we're trying to get done before we dive deep into this one, the highway zaps being one of them. We also are looking at upgrading the permit system for planning and development, so that's another thing we're trying to accomplish over the summer here. But yeah, by the end of the year, we should have a new interactive mapping app published out there.
Is it going to be a completely new interface, or is it going to be pretty similar?
We're shooting for pretty similar, yeah.
Because we don't like to freak people out.
About that. Yeah, we put something new out there, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we put a survey out to collect feedback from
the users.
The users. And the feedback we got is a lot of people like the functions and stuff like that.
For the most part, it's pretty user-friendly.
Yeah. So we're definitely trying to keep it like that.
It has some quirks that come out. Like, the mobile thing is the biggest one.
Yeah,
that's the most calls that we get is from people who are trying to access it on a tablet or a phone, and it's not.
You can tell right away.
Yeah. They're like, I don't own a computer.
Are you doing this on your phone? Yeah, it's not going to work.
Yeah. And then there are a few of the like tools that sometimes crash and get a little
wonky.
So
the search for surveys.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Has some issues periodically. Every county's interactive mapping website has some issues. They're all a little different. We've been very fortunate. I've received a lot of comments over the years that ours has been one of the best ones too.
I will tell you, literally in parades every year, especially in Twin Lakes, I have people that yell out how much they like the property inquiry page. And I think that's the weirdest thing, that someone would yell at you in a parade, but I get it yelled at me. So I'm just saying, it's, you know, one of those, you know.
Well, I hope you toss some candy at them.
I do peg them with a piece of bubble gum. It's good. Yeah.
So that project will wrap up by the end of this year. And then we have our most recent project that we're just starting now, which is the 2022 grant project. That was for a $60,000 award. The state has done things a little differently this time around. They have given us the entire $60,000 up front, as well as they raised it from 50 to 60.
After years of telling us it was going down, which was, you know, a little confusing. Yeah.
Apparently, they had a lot of money in their accounts that they were afraid was going to go to...
Away.
Get sucked away. As money tends to at the state.
So this council decided to use those funds for the scanning and indexing of the Register of Deeds grantor and grantee books. And Joellen, you want to give us a quick update on where we are on that?
Well, when we did our global scanning, when we scanned everything in with the redaction money that we'd gotten from the state before that program ended, we did scan in the grantor grantee index books, but we didn't format them and, you know, work with our other vendor, Trimon, to get them available online because we ran out of money. And they weren't the priority. You know, other things were more important. But these records also need to be maintained. And, you know, we do have documents that don't necessarily have a legal description or, you know, a traceable legal description that people can find. So our mandate to maintain these records in perpetuity requires that we have, which is when we scanned them in, that gave us that extra copy, but we don't actually have it. The company who scanned them in has it. So that, you know, of that initial 90,000 that was quoted to us, a big chunk of that is the scanning, you know, because they would have had to come in here, but they did at the time come in here and take over that one conference room and scan everything. So the point now, what they just need to do, not just need to do though, is format them so that they can be searchable and then, you know, make them available on the internet. And that's something we'll have to coordinate with our land records management vendor, Trimon Systems, to get that done. And then US Imaging will have to format the books. And they'll just be formatted alphabetically. We're not obviously going to index every name that's in those books. It would be impossible to read. It's all handwritten, the old books, so we wouldn't be able to read it. But the indexes themselves, you'll be able to look like 1850 Grantor Index A. You know, and then, you know, whatever, you know, maybe it goes 1850 to 1876 or whatever, and pull that all forward to 1994 is when we stopped writing in books and went completely digital. So
We weren't entirely sure if we were going to use the entire $60,000 for this particular project, and we had the foresight to write up the grant so that if Joellen does not use all $60,000, that there will be some items.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath on.
I know,
just in case.
$60,000 just doesn't go as far as it used to. I'm glad they're scanned in, because 90,000 is 30,000 short. So.
Yeah.
At least a good chunk of it. That would have been a good chunk of it. So,
we'll cross our fingers on that. And Joellen, after this is done, is essentially most everything in your office scanned at that point?
Pretty much, yeah. We're currently doing some manual index scanning of DD-214s and some old vital records that are on microfilm. You know, that they're kind of a hodgepodge. It's like a drawer of microfilm that, you know, we've got a scanner that we can just scan that in ourselves in between when we have time. But after that, yeah, we are fully digital.
That was a huge...
Oh, it's already huge. We're already a ghost town.
See, I have a drawer of old microfiche that is the backup plan.
I mean, we don't see any. We have the occasional searcher come in, but whenever I go to any meetings with any title companies, like, yeah, Joellen, we had no complaints about Kenosha. You know, your records are available. I mean, our track index has been online for a number of years now, and so if it's not, we're fully indexed back, you know, 60 years, and if they want to look further back than that, they can go into the, open up a track index, and they can search the track index, and then once we get these available, they can also search those books. We don't get a lot of call for grant or grantee books, but, you know, they are something that people are interested in and that we're required to maintain, so... Part of the public record.
Thank you, Joellen. The 2022 imagery acquisition, really exciting. For me, this is the first year we've ever done it on a year that doesn't end in a zero or a five.
Yeah, we started doing it more often now, so yeah.
The price has really come down in recent years. And there's such a need because of all the development that's happening throughout the county. So we just had planes up in the air 2 to 3 weeks ago, collecting all that information. It was a very difficult spring to fly from what I could tell, and Rob is more of an expert.
No, I mean, this was probably, has to be the worst spring possible. It was cloudy, windy, and a lot of rain, you know, so it was just, for ideal conditions, it's sky clear, so not a cloud in the sky.
And leaves on trees,
before
yeah.
Leaves come on.
Before, and it has to be leaf off, and it also has to, you have to be within a
and
certain
no snow,
sun angle.
Because snow messes up.
And snow and ice, free, but it, you know, and you have to have a certain sun angle, so you can't be flying, like, just really early in the morning, or really late in the afternoon, or, you know, early evening, you know, so... And the when it was clear, it was so windy. And I mean, I've been up in a plane, and it's not at that altitude. It is awful. I mean, it is absolutely horrendous. As far as I've seen people lose teeth. I mean, you know, because you're hitting the ceiling, and you're coming straight down, and then, you know, hitting it on a computer or a laptop that's in front of you and things of that sort. So it's one of those where it's just not pleasant.
It's like an ocean nightmare.
Yeah. So it was, so with the wind, you know, that also presented problems with even on, with, you know, having clear skies. So that just made everything exponentially more difficult to get this acquired, in the time frame. So glad that that we got it, or that it was flown, but it was
just funny to me how the moment they said that they had the initial flights flown, that suddenly the sun came out at mm-hmm. that point.
Yes.
In just a week,
yes.
The last week or two. But it was a strange spring. But
yeah.
The initial imagery has been flown. They may go and do touch-up flights usually within 30 days. Now, they're taking that data and they're looking at it internally through doing a number of QC checks. They will do the touch-up plates as needed. The obliques, we're scheduled to get somewhere around July 1st. We will get a library of those images that we will have in-house. We generally do not use them other than sending them over to 911 because they put them in their system. Everyone else tends to use Connect Explorer, which is the pictometry solution to, it's a cloud-based software that allows the viewing of those images. So if you don't, Lieutenant Easter, be new here, if you don't have access to that imagery, I can create an account for you if you would like.
Absolutely.
So I will just do so and send that to you.
All right.
Okay.
Sounds good. I appreciate
Make
that.
Make sure you got a little to your computer, because you know, I think slow down otherwise.
Great. Sounds like an IT issue.
I know a guy.
I know a guy.
You got a guy?
I'm like, I just used a part of the website because my computer would crash every time I tried to pull up that kind of imagery. It doesn't have enough.
Yeah. Some of the early access imagery is already available on that application. So you have to click a button down in a menu system, but it is available. So you can get spring of 2022 images. So we're very excited about this, and we're very hopeful that we'll fly again in 2025, but then we would fly again in either 27 or 28, if funding allows. But prices have really come down. We used to pay $150,000 per flight. To give you an idea, this year it's been about $80,000 total.
Right.
So
exactly.
And thank you to the Regional Planning Commission. They bring some cost sharing dollars into the program, and really they head up the program for the entire region. So
awesome.
Yeah. Any questions on the imagery program?
More fun pictures for. You guys to play.
Any new business anyone wants to bring forward?
I guess I can just give a little update on the Wisconsin Help for Homeowners program that's out there. As most of you know, I chaired a task force on homeownership for the state. And from that, we started a new homeownership network called Take Root Wisconsin. And that program and the assorted agencies throughout the state in the community action agencies has been tasked with being the boots on the ground for the Wisconsin Help for Homeowners program. It's $93 million that were given from the federal government to the state to help those people who were affected by COVID over the last couple of years and fell behind on mortgage payments or property taxes or utility payments on their primary residence. So it's not for just anybody. It's not all the business money you've heard about. This is really for regular homeowners who, you know, lost work hours or wages or were out
of
business.
Do they have to establish that they lost work
hours?
Well,
it depends where they fall on the income scale. There's a certain level, if they're below that, it's pretty much assumed they were affected by COVID in one way or another. But there is a process by which they apply and certain paperwork that they apply with that kind of gets them to that point where we know if we need more paperwork or not. There have been people who have been denied already. We've had about 1,200 people that have been denied from the applicants. One guy wanted $10,000 because he missed one day of work, and that wasn't really, you know, going to happen.
They were impacted by COVID. Not just I bought a boat and didn't pay mortgage.
Yeah. No. So there have been applications in every county in the state so far. Over 10,000 applications have been made. Over 1 million has already gone out the door to people. Of that 93 million, about 10% of it is for administrative costs. So those boots on the ground, people who are talking to people and working through their applications. Another 5% is split between legal assistance and financial counseling. because just about everybody who applies has a little bit of financial and housing counseling that they work with them for, to make sure that if they are given this assistance and get caught up to date, they can continue to be caught up to date and they're not going to be in the same position in, you know, 2 more years. So trying to work on things like refinancing if they had a really high interest rate at one point, or looking at cleaning up title issues. As we know, as we all at this table probably know, people often inherit property and never go through the probate process and never get off the deceased relative's name. And so in order to be qualify for a loan or anything else, it has to be in their name. So that's part of what the legal assistance is for, is to help them clean up those title issues so they can move forward and be in a better place going on. But yeah, it's been, you know, as you can imagine, it's an interesting program whenever you have the federal, state, and local governments and private agencies involved. It's an adventure every day. So, but it's getting good help. We've had most of the money, actually, that has gone out the door at this point has been for delinquent property taxes throughout the state, because we got just about every treasurer in the state to send in the proper paperwork before the program went live, but trying to get all the mortgage companies to send in their paperwork so they can be cut a check has been like pulling teeth. Like, they can complain about delinquent mortgage payments, but they can't return the paperwork so they can get paid for the delinquent mortgage payments. It's like, oh. So, and there's so many of them out there that it's just like throwing a piece of paper in the wind. It's just like, oh, look, another one. We found another mortgage company. So, but it's an ongoing process, I think. But yeah, it's doing well.
There's the legislation pending at the federal level to require or to make it available for judges to have their private information concealed. So we're public records. So now, you know, the WRDA is looking at, and the state of Wisconsin is looking at how that something like that, you know, when that legislation goes through, how we would manage that to, you know, to redact those, that information. The latest that we've heard is they would get a form from the state, which they would submit to my office, which would indicate, you know, who they are and what property they have, and every mortgage, every deed, you know, every tax roll information would all have to be concealed so that the public could not access it. You know, there's problems with it. One of the problems is, like that Let's Safe at Home program that we have now in place, is that, you know, who's going to want protection next?
Yeah.
Police are going to want it.
Exactly.
Teachers are going to want it. You know, it's going to be a slippery slope, mm-hmm. and public land records don't work well if everybody has
them. You can't account for all the bits of land.
It doesn't work real well. It doesn't work real well for the individuals. It doesn't work real well for the transfer of property, you know, getting a mortgage. Who's going to be entitled? You know, who are we going to be able to release that information to? You know, Susie Searcher at ABC Title Company, I don't know about that. You know, they're
right.
They're just, they
now,
come
how do you
and
ever
go,
get
you know?
Title insurance on property
right.
if it's not if allowed
if
to
all the
be
record,
in your name
the entire
public record?
Record. Yeah, the entire record is concealed. So just something for Mike to think about. Yeah, looking at some of that down the road. Keep that in the back of your brain.
Oh, yeah, it's... I think,
you know, it's the thing is, it's driven by, there was a judge that was murdered. You know, he had an unpopular judgment, and, you know, the people who were affected by it hunted him down and killed him. And that is a tragedy. That's a terrible tragedy. There's a lot of tragedy in life, and we can't put a Band-Aid over all of it. You know, we can't, when you run for public office, your name and address are
published.
Public. They're public. It's made public, you know.
I don't get to hide it.
Yeah, not only do you not, you know, the county clerk can't hide it. It's got to be filed, it's filed publicly. So, I don't, you know, to me it's bad legislation, but nobody asked me, so.
Yeah.
As usual.
It's a thing. But I think there's always that happy medium point and everything. Like, when we develop property inquiry, one of the discussion points when we were developing it was, were we going to allow people to search by name
right.
online without, you know, being in our
in
office? And
inquiry,
we decided
right.
no, because just about everybody who is using those records for a legitimate purpose knows at least the address, right? Like, if you're looking up a house you're interested in buying, you at least know the address of the house you're looking at. And, you know, same thing, you know, for a title company. They know the parcel number and or the address.
I will tell you, though, I think we're the only county that does that.
Yeah.
Every other county, it's all open.
Yep.
And when COVID hit, I made it open in land records, yeah. not in GCS, but if somebody was searching documents,
they could search by name,
which yeah. previously they couldn't, but I am required to make those records available.
Available, and you were closed. So,
right,
yeah,
and
yeah.
the building was closed, so yeah. now they're out there, I can't take them back.
But
the public, you know, the public's not searching that, looking for someone. The
no.
title companies are
searching for it.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it's a little different. Like our website, every Joe Blow in the world.
Yeah. Plus, you have to pay to look at mine.
Yeah, yeah, that's different.
It's different if you get it.
And there's a record of who looked at
right,
it.
Right. There
you,
is.
You,
right.
You have a login.
You have a credit card that you had to enter.
Enter to put it on.
Right.
But our property inquiry is free and open to the public. So it's like if you're going to use that legitimately, you're gonna know either the address or the parcel number. Like, there's almost no case where you're not gonna know one of those two things. Unless you're looking for somebody. And
right.
then I start to question the use of that technology and that purpose. So it's like, so I think that's important to do, like, to understand that there's an importance.
You can Google somebody's
on both
name.
Sides.
You Google somebody's name and
everything's out there.
Yeah, so.
I'm like, I don't know how that judge is ever going to be able to not have all the crap out there because they have to run for office.
Right.
You know, it's everybody knows how old I am. I can't even lie about how old I am. Why I have to fill it on a form every time I run for office. Not that I would, because I don't care that much. But, but I mean, I don't know. It's about a balancing act. I think people like to go 100% one way or the other instead of finding something that can make sense from a public record standpoint and also serve as some protection to those people who need it, not just a judge, but also, you know, people with...
You know, the best thing to do, I think, is to incorporate yourself, you know, and you may pay a 0.5% interest higher on your mortgage interest rate, but it's a small price to pay
to know
for
that nobody
kind of security,
find you.
Right.
Right.
So
yeah.
if you're serious about protecting yourself, that would probably be.
And I think that's one of the things I like about the Safe at Home program here in Wisconsin is that they require if somebody is signing up for that and getting that protection and records, that they actually do all the other things. You can't order on Amazon if you're under safe.
Right.
Because Amazon sells their mailing list to people and your name and address would be out there. So you can't have an Amazon
You can't order pizza. You can't have pizza delivered.
Yeah.
You can't use DoorDash.
Any of those
yeah,
things.
Any of those things. As soon as you do, you're off the program.
Yeah.
So.
You're, because all those things lead to all those lists that all those people can find online. So, yeah, it's crazy. Bye.
Any other items anyone would like to discuss before we talk about our next meeting? One last thing I'll mention. Horace, if this is, in fact, your last meeting with us, thank you very much for your service to the Land
Council. And good luck.
You're like, we'll see.
Thank you.
And don't hesitate to contact us for anything you may need in the future. And we know you're not going to be far away.
No, not far at all.
Stone's throw.
Yep.
Our next meeting will be roughly mid-November. We will potentially be voting on the use of the 2023 grant fund. So if anyone has any ideas for projects on how to use this funding for next year, please get in touch with me, anyone from the CALM team, which would be Terry, Joellen, Andy Bueller, Reggie, Mike. We need ideas on how to use those funds, and we'll start discussing that in earnest probably in September area. I don't know what the award will be. We generally find out right around October 1st. I am not going to hold my breath that it will be $60,000.
Probably not.
Joellen is noticing things that may
recordings are down.
Down, so yeah. That means less money.
So
the pot of
yeah,
money.
We're sending less money to the state. That's
yeah.
less to come back to us.
Office, so
gotcha.
We can generally tell about how things are going to go for the money amount by
so
how Joe's office is doing
it,
in recordings.
It looked like they were going up, so now they're a little bit
oh, they're definitely down. And yeah. You know, we send the state $7 for every recording. Every document recorded, they get $7. And I guess with 60,000 back, we're probably getting $2 back.
Yeah.
Less than $2.
Well,
like,
as most state programs, there are net givers and net takers.
Right.
And, because smaller, more rural communities don't have nearly as many documents.
Right.
As I've said before, Kenosha is considered a wealthier county across the state. So we do, you know, there are counties who record 1,500 documents a year. You know, we record over 2,000 a month, so. We're a little stronger and bigger.
Quick turnover.
And with that.
We're good?
We're good.
All right.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank
and
you.
And now you know more about, you know, land records.
Absolutely.
Than you ever
more than I did about an hour ago.
Let's go see if we can find some monuments.
Well, it was a pleasure meeting everybody.
Nice seeing you too. How's Tasha doing?
What's that?
How's Tasha doing?
She's doing good. Yeah, she's doing very good. Very busy. She's working three times as hard, you know, and with the market the way it is right now.
Oh yeah.
She's showing everybody.
So what's the
everything?
10 houses graduation. For every sale
It's commendable.
It was a few.
So I feel bad for her in the sense that she's got to work so much harder for.
Indoors. Like, so it'll be hotter and all.
And then I think
a little more space new with all those chilling now.
Oh yeah, definitely more space. So and I think my mother-in-law is closing on one.
I don't know how many graduates. I mean,
2,000
ish.
Appreciate it. I was in there when my
graduate. Helps me out too.
Yeah.
Well, it was nice meeting you, actually. Yeah, because I never
actually. Yeah, that's what I'm going to sit there and say. But
no, that live in the
room. No, it's exciting. And then we're just.
He scared me to death. I don't know if Tasha
wrote. Oh, gosh.
So when I was at Command Study, I was always scared going to the war room.
Just
looked grumpy. Seriously, he did. Like, he looked grumpy. He always just parked. But I mean, he ran.
He has a piercing stare.
He does. Like, he knows what he wants, and he wants it his way. But no, I forget.
It's off of Algoma.
I absolutely love
it. So you know, so you take Algoma and you take
But yeah, you can
from north.
Just a little.
It's a little different when I saw the wedding and all the Saturday. He's like, shots, okay.
That's a completely different side.
So it's she.
That was funny. That was hilarious.
Basically, right. All
right. Well, sounds good, man. I see you.
So it's
there for a year.
Oh, did you?
A year as well. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's one of those where, her apartment is, it's not bad. I mean, it's better. My son's apartment was awful. I mean, it was off of Franklin, off Jackson, and and it was an old 1800s house that leaked and just
that only a college kid could live
only
in.
Only
right?
A college kid could live in, and it was like, we don't need to be there. You know, where hers is a little bit more better kept and a little bit more updated.
Good.
So it's it's college. I mean, you know, like I said, her birthday was it was all good. I mean, you know, as far as we went and celebrated